Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Mark Schanowski, Kendall Gill, Will Perdue coming at you as the season winding to a close. It's been tough for the Bulls and for Jim Boylan to put out a competitive roster because seven of their top guys are out right now with injuries. To their credit, they're still competing and playing in close games.
They are, but a lot of these guys are still trying to get on NBA rosters and come into training camps of NBA teams for next year. So that's why they're playing so hard. Shaq Harrison is doing a great job. Walt Lemon now has come around and has played three solid games. And, a number of other players. Even Ryan Arcidiacono still has to play solid, because, he's not guaranteed a spot to come back for next year. So as a player, and you don't have anything guaranteed for next year, you still have to put out 100%, even though there's four games left.
You know, a name you didn't bring up was Wayne Selden. Remember?
Yeah, Wayne Selden too, yeah.
There was a time frame where we were talking about, he would probably be a good 11th or 12th man, guy coming off the bench, but, he's kind of dropped off a little bit, and all of a sudden you start, okay, well, who's a better fit? Shaq Harrison a better fit? Selden a better fit? Where does Archie fit into the equation? Because when you talk about Archie, you're like, has he shown dramatic improvement this year? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But, where do the Bulls go with him, considering the fact that, their goal is to draft a point guard? Then, technically you still have Dunn left for one more year on a contract. So where does Archie fit in the equation? There's still a lot to be decided. Nothing, that will have a major impact on the roster, but it's something that will help fill out the roster. So, these guys feel like there's still a lot on the line with these last couple games to play.
The reality is, though, that seven of their top rotation players are out because of injury or illness, and that's including Denzel Valentine, who had the reconstructive ankle surgery. And as a former lottery pick, I don't think they've closed the door on Denzel. He's a guy who can see the floor well, who can be an effective player in that second unit, and he was an effective three-point shooter a year ago. So I think Denzel's still in the plans. The guys that are playing right now, they're playing for spots 10 through 15.
Oh,
and really,
yeah.
I don't think any of the guys that we're seeing playing regularly, other than Robin Lopez, figure in the rotation for next year.
Yeah, no. And the thing is, too, you mentioned Denzel Valentine. Bulls are in need of a point guard. If they draft the point guard, now you have that point guard. If they sign a point guard, you have that point guard. You have Chris Dunn, and you got
Archie,
and you got Denzel and Archie.
Yeah.
So, for Shaq Harrison, it's going to be tough. I think Shaq Harrison actually, as well as he has played, he's auditioning for another team right now because I don't think there's any room for him.
And now, we've been told that the team is behind him, and Boylan had made the comment the other day about, this multi-position ball handler thing is really working well for us. So you would think that one of the things that Denzel does, I know we joke that when he has the ball, it's not really a fast break, it's a medium speed break, but he sees the floor really well, he handles the ball well, and, he puts the ball on the money where guys need it. So
he's got a high basketball IQ.
Yeah, he's a guy that can, be a valuable part of that second unit as far as being able to advance the basketball. Now, let's not forget, though, about what Denzel said last season after the season was over. He said, hey, I've played well enough to be a starter on this team. Mm-hmm. But now all of a sudden you're like, okay, whose position are you taking? And I think with the advancements and the trades that they've made and the what they've done through the draft, I don't think that's a true statement anymore. I think he's in a position where I agree with you, Mark. I don't think the Bulls have given up on him, but he's still got to prove himself. He can talk about, you know, everything he's done in the past, but the past is the past. You know, I think because of, you know, what the Bulls are trying to do, he has to prove that he not only, you know, deserves a spot on the team, which I think he does, but he's got to prove he deserves playing time.
I know a lot of our fans heard Wilt Perdue on the radio calling game NCAA tournament games for Westwood One, and you got a chance to see a wide variety of players, not maybe the top elite players. You didn't have Duke in the regionals that you were covering, but you saw some kids from Tennessee. You saw Carson Edwards from Purdue. Yeah. These are guys that are probably second-round picks. The Bulls do hold an early second-round pick they got from Memphis in the Justin Holiday trade, somewhere between 35 and 40. I know they'd love for a guy like P.J. Washington to fall that far. He's probably not going to.
I don't think he will. I think
you see anybody early second-round that maybe it could be intriguing?
You know, the interesting thing is that I just, you know, of what I saw of the guys for Tennessee, I just don't think they're NBA-caliber players. I think they're some tweeners.
Right.
You know, Williams is their leading scorer, two-time SEC player of the year, but he's a tweener. He's 6'6".
He's a power forward at that size, yeah.
And he would have to learn how to play the three, maybe even the two. And I just don't see that for him. You know, Admiral Schofield, I didn't see, you know, he can shoot the college three. I don't know if he can shoot the NBA three, but he can't really put the ball on the deck very well. So I saw a lot of weaknesses, but
Carson, you know, Edwards a first-rounder now?
I still don't. Because that's the thing. The one thing I know a lot of people don't like this because they're like, what size have to do with it? But size has a lot to do with everything. Yeah. And I think he's a little undersized, even though he looks like more like a football player than he does a basketball player.
Could he be like a Ben Gordon was here?
I think he can, though, because the one thing I was impressed with, that the speed that he could play at, the pounding that he would take, because he did not hesitate to attack the rim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think his body is built to be able to play a physical style of basketball because I don't think he's a finesse player. But the one thing I will say is he could put his head down. He could get past anybody, and he showed that. I mean, he can stop on a dime and knock down a three, and I'm talking about a deep three.
Mm-hmm.
And
he can score off the dribble. He's not a guy that you have to run off a million screens.
No, you don't. I mean, he could put it on the one thing he does a great job of is the speed at which he plays at one, two, three dribbles. And he can stop on a dime and rise up and hit a contested shot. He did it time and time again. And if you go back and look at his numbers, he had, 29 in their first game, and I forgot who they played.
He had 42
against Villanova, 42 against Virginia, one of the best defensive teams in the country. And a lot of his shots were contested. It wasn't like he was getting open shots
deep.
And getting layups.
Deep.
And deep. But I think he could be a guy that, you know – you don't want to say a steal in a second round, but I think a guy that is a second rounder could play valuable minutes.
Because he's only about 6 feet tall, and really he's more of a two guard than he is a point guard. So if he was going to come into the league as a point guard, he'd really have to improve his ball handling and his willingness to pass, because I don't think that's there right now. Yeah. Think about Trae Young. People said, well, he was undersized, but he led the nation in assists, and he's a willing passer, and I think that's what makes him special. Whereas I think Carson Edwards would be more of a specialist, a guy that's just going to get you points off the bench.
Yeah, but I believe in his ability to handle the basketball. I just don't know about – I think you're correct about the passing. He has to be a willing passer. But all the other intangibles, he has. I mean, and if you got a skill level like that – Allen Iverson was 6 feet tall, but he had the skill level to get away from anybody and to score on anybody. I don't know whether Carson Edwards is Allen Iverson, but he can put points up like that, you know.
Could Edwards will be as good as Colin Sexton, who came into the league as the eighth pick out of Alabama?
As Kendall said, he really has to work on his ball handling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing I will say about Colin Sexton is his ability to handle the ball.
But he won't pass either, though.
Well, he's not a willing passer. But I just think that, like Kendall said, he's more of a two-guard mentality, a scoring mentality. And at 6 feet, I don't know how that's going to play. You know, if he is going to play significant minutes, he would have to be a primary ball handler, and I think he would have to work on. But then I think, as we've seen with a lot of guys in this league, when they try to change position, that affects how they play. So then that in turn affects how effective they are on the floor because they're not playing their natural position. In college, he was a scorer.
You called one of the Virginia games, or maybe two Virginia games, right?
Yep.
How do they get it done? Because you look at the talent on the roster. They got the two guards, Guy and Ty Jerome. you know, who are somewhat limited athletically.
Yes, they are.
And then their star player is supposed to be DeAndre Hunter.
But they're talking about a lottery pick, and I can honestly say I didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know, and I kept waiting. And, you know, I'll give him credit. He was a willing passer. He was, better than average defender. But I didn't see, a lottery pick type player. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even sure I necessarily saw a first-round guy. Now, I will say this. I hadn't seen him a lot, but I'd watched some Virginia games, and he was first-team All-ACC. So that says a lot considering the league he was in. But, Virginia, and we were joking about did they do it with smoke and mirrors? Because, when you watch them warm up, you just sit there and you're like, you ask that question, why the game's going on. Mm-hmm. But the one thing they do is they cover well for each other. They play unbelievable team defense.
Yeah.
They don't have one great individual defender. But if a guy gets beat, the next guy in line is there. And the one thing they do is they wear you down. And I kind of joked during the Purdue-Virginia game that I kind of feel like I'm watching the Jordan rules. They're like, you know what? We're going to let Carson Edwards score as many points as he wants, and we're going to shut down everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think it was Klein for Purdue. He had 29 the night before. Mm-hmm. And they locked in on him, and he was not getting any open looks at all.
He's going to remember that free throw he missed for the rest of his life.
Oh.
That was a ball, man, that free throw. Oh, yeah. God.
But, and it's just – you saw some guys that could probably be some second-round picks that could play. But the one thing about Virginia, they are a team, and they play as a team. And it was kind of funny. Their coach said, and when he was interviewing with us, he's like, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Because he understands that it's not a pretty form of basketball.
Well, saying that, the Vegas odds makers have Virginia as the favorite to win the Final Four and claim the national championship. Who do you guys pick in the Final Four? Who's going to cut down the nets?
I'm taking Michigan State since I picked them to beat Duke.
That's right. Yeah, you had them.
I'm going to pick Michigan State.
I think it's going to be Michigan State and Virginia in the championship game. Like you said, Mark, after I saw them play, and I've seen them play in years past, and their ability to just smother people and literally squeeze the life out of somebody. They won a high scoring game against Purdue. They won a low scoring game against Oregon, 53-49. They can play basically any style. And I will say this, they believe that they're going to win, because like you talked about, when I was watching, I was like, how in the hell has this team won 33 games?
Yeah.
And then, not only did they win 33 games, now they're in the Final Four.
Yeah, I feel good for Tony Bennett, because after losing to the 16th seed, and then they were trailed Gardner-Webb in another 116 matchup this year. Can you imagine if they'd have lost that game?
Yeah.
They would have probably had to fire Tony Bennett, who's done such an incredible job over there. But if he'd have lost 2 years in a row to a 16 seed?
Right, yeah, they probably would have had some questions to answer. But, it's good for Tony. I played with Tony in Charlotte for a year or two, and, he's a hard worker. He coaches how he has to. Like Will said, doesn't have all the greatest athletes or the greatest defenders, but collectively they can get some stuff done. I call that a masterpiece of faulty construction. that's what they are, actually.
And watching his dad, Dick Bennett, who coached at Wisconsin all those years, suffer in the stands was really something.
Yeah, he was all my
It was kind of interesting you mentioned that. His dad normally doesn't go because he said it's just too painful.
Mm-hmm.
But he, for that game against Purdue, his dad felt like he had to be there, almost like he felt something special was going to happen, and he didn't want to miss out. Mm-hmm. And he went to the game.
I have a question for you, Will, because you've seen R.J. Barrett in person.
Right.
I am not impressed by R.J. Barrett. I think that, he's a talented kid, but at the next level, I think he lacks the athleticism, the quickness, outside shot to be a real, real top-level player.
And I will agree with something that you said that we were talking about during the Knicks game. The one thing he can do at the college level is play bully ball.
Yeah. Can do that.
And I think that's what he does. Physically, he's a specimen. Mm-hmm. But I think at the next level, for him to be really effective, I think his best position, in my opinion, is almost a point guard. Mm. In the sense that, because I think he can pass the ball well, he can handle the ball well, and I don't think, like he's doing in college, I don't think he's just going to be able to overpower guys in the league.
Yeah, no.
To where, okay, I'm just going to run right over you and get to the rim. I don't think that works. That's going to work. You know, he's going to need a screen roll to get himself open.
Yeah, I mean, because that's all they set for him.
And he's going to have to come off double screens, but I don't see him as a catch-and-shoot guy either.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. And the thing you wonder is, and you know this, because of his physical skills, he's probably going to do really well when he goes to all these teams and the individual testing. And,
right.
You know, and I guarantee you he's going to be one of those guys, his agent is going to be like, we don't play against anybody. We just come in, we shoot. We do all the testing. You can test his vertical, his 40, his lateral quickness, his second jump, but we're not playing any games.
Right.
And then you've seen him play enough. Do you want him or not? Because I think if he was one of those guys that played one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, he would get exposed.
Yeah.
Like you're talking about.
I agree.
Talk about how important the testing is going to be. It's really going to be important for Cam Reddish as well. He was a guy who came in as a consensus top three pick. And he shot 33% from the college three-point line. He's going to have to shoot the lights out in individual workouts for some team to take him in the high lottery. Yep. Let's get back to the NBA talk. You're listening to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Mark Kendall and Will with you. You know, we were just talking about something off the air at halftime of the Bulls-Wizards game, talking about the idea that the late-season games have gotten so ugly where, you know, the guys are hurt or just being held out for rest or whatever. You know, I threw out the idea that maybe what they should do with all the lottery teams is have them play in a tournament late in the year where after the All-Star break, let's say you put together the records of those teams, and the team that has the best record over those last 6 weeks gets the number one pick. Because then these bad teams would have something to play for instead of seeing how many lottery combinations can we get by losing. I think it really disincentivizes winning. And I think that's the biggest problem they're having, because so many times you go into a big arena like the United Center and people, you know, pay good money for those seats and they're seeing a game where neither team is really that motivated to win.
Right.
And I think the commissioner has to find a way to make these games in March and early April more meaningful, not only the teams going to the playoffs, but for the teams that have already fallen out of that race.
Yeah, and also they're watering down the product. You know, and let's not forget, I mean, the fans pay great money to come out and watch the best product possible. And at the end of the season, teams that are not in the playoff hunt, they bring up guys from the G League. And I'm not trying to disparage the guys from the G League. I mean, they deserve their chance too. But when you have four and five, six G League guys on one team and the fans come and like, hold on, wait a minute. Who are these guys? You know, it can't be like that.
I think it'd be fairly easy to do too. You just use the All-Star game as your marker and let those teams that are outside of the top 16 play it off for that first pick.
Well, unfortunately, you know, there's going to be some teams that are going to be like, well, according to the numbers, we have the most difficult schedule left.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
don't be so bad in the first place.
Mm-hmm. It's better to decide who gets the number one pick that way than just have ping pong balls popped up with lottery combinations to see who gets it.
I agree with you, because I think that somehow you have to disincentivize losing.
Mm-hmm.
They were hoping that by readjusting the draft that this type of thing would stop, but it hasn't. Teams are still trying to lose games to improve their chances to get the number one pick. Now, I understand it's all for Zion Williams, but you're probably going to see the same thing next year.
There's always going to be a guy like that. Maybe not to that level, but there's always going to be a guy that everyone wants to get on their franchise.
So there has to be something to penalize losing. And I don't think that by, okay, since you have the worst record, you get the most ping pong balls. All of a sudden, you got to. I think that the formula has to change. And there's got to – listen, we all know how popular the league is right now. But the popularity is in the top one-third. They need to do something to help elevate the bottom one-third.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the way you talk about it is that we obviously can't add more games, but let's reward these guys that actually are trying to win basketball games instead of teams that are actually trying to lose basketball games and holding guys out for load management. And now I understand the teams that are in the playoff hunt. That's just the way things are done now. But as you talked about, who was it? like even the Wizards are holding out Jeff Green for rest.
With three games left.
You got three games to go. What are you talking about?
Well, the thing is, you couldn't do it a pure split where the 16 teams at the All-Star break, you know, are out in the 14 teams, because that could change. Teams can go back and forth. But I think you could easily get the bottom six or eight to play it off, because those teams aren't going to get all the way into a playoff position after that. So it's something for the commissioner and other people at the competition committee to talk about, because there's just too many games late in the season that are tough to watch, and I think that's something the league has to be concerned about. Kendall, you were mentioning something interesting about the MVP race. You feel like it's almost a dead heat now between Harden and Giannis, and obviously the season's over. I don't know if either one can do anything, but Milwaukee's close to wrapping up the best record in the NBA. You think that might put Giannis over the top with the voters?
I think so, considering they finished sixth in the playoffs last season, and then now they're going to be number one, the type of year that Giannis has had. And let's not forget, because James Harden had such a great season last season, Giannis kind of got overshadowed. But he's been playing like this for 2 years in a row. I think that Giannis actually deserves the nod over James Harden at this point. I actually like his game a lot better than James Harden. James Harden dominates the basketball, really doesn't play at the other end of the floor. And I know, you can reward scoring, and he's been scoring at a crazy clip. He's had a number of 60-point games this year. But when you look at Giannis's total body of work, I think that's why he should be the MVP.
And I think the deciding factor, I think, would be when they start talking about win shares. As you talk about, they went basically from 6-1.
Right.
And pretty much Houston's right where they were last year. Now, is Houston a contender? Absolutely. But is what Harden is what he's doing improve that team from last year, or are they pretty much the same team where Harden has to score so many points just for them to be successful?
Right.
And I think part of it is that we know how voters are, because Harden won last year. I think that, you know, Giannis will get a majority of the votes because Harden won last year. And as you talk about, I think he's been doing it for the last 2.5 seasons.
Yeah.
But even as well as Giannis played last year, I think we've seen significant improvement into this year.
Yeah. Three-point shooting now. He's knocking down three-point shots now.
Now, unfortunately for Harden, because he's been this good for a long time, you wonder, can he really get much better?
Right.
So as these guys continue to get better and better every year, you're like, well, look what this guy's done from last year to this year. Well, Harden's still putting up great numbers.
Is that how it was when you played with Michael? I mean, he would win MVP, and he would still come back and have the same year the following year?
Listen, we all knew that every year Michael was the MVP. So, you know, the fact that Karl Malone won MVP, it's just nothing's changed. Guys get tired of voting for the same guy every year. They want something different, because you're just like, really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, he could have won it every year. There's no question.
And you're just like, Karl Malone? Okay.
So who are you voting for?
I would vote for Giannis.
All right, I'll make it a three sweep there.
Yeah.
Go for Giannis on that. Last thing, we'll wrap things up. I don't know if you guys have been noticing, Golden State starting to look more like Golden State now. Yeah. Kevin Durant's got that edge to his game. DeMarcus Cousins is rounding into shape, where he's putting up pretty good numbers. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing, you know, Steph Curry now with his new contact lenses. now he can shoot better.
As if it can't get any worse for everybody else in the NBA.
I don't think, you know, Denver's shown that they're not ready. I think Houston's not afraid of Golden State, so I think Houston might give them a competitive series. But I don't know that anybody in the East can beat them. Are we looking at a coronation for a Golden State three-peat?
Look, Mark, do we have the trophy here right now? Let's wrap it up and just send it out there right now, because nobody's going to beat them. And, of course, Will's been a part of championship teams. They are now starting to get interested again. And this is when championship teams start to get interested. Okay, now the playoffs, they don't really care about the regular season.
Listen, they made the mistake. And I don't want to say it's a mistake, but they talked about how important 73 wins were. When was the last time they didn't win the championship?
Yeah, that was
73 wins in the regular season.
Right.
But also, I mean, quite honestly, I don't see anything derailing them outside of an injury.
Sure, yeah.
Because of the fact that it's just
– How competitive would a Houston-Golden State series be? Because, as I mentioned, Houston's really not afraid to play them.
No, they're not, but it just – The problem is that I think what you would see was, in my opinion, is you're going to see Harden average 40 a game, Chris Paul and Capella. But still, even Houston can't outscore Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that we do know about Golden State is when they want to, they can play defense.
Yeah.
What I haven't seen is Houston play defense. And I think that's the one team that Houston can outscore everybody but Golden State. And that's where I think it'll be interesting. But I just don't – I don't see him – the question is not how interesting is it. Does Golden State win in five games or do they win in six?
Yeah, the playoffs right around the corner as we reach the end of the regular season. It's going to be very interesting to see if any team can step up with a realistic chance of challenging the Golden State Warriors. I want to thank you so much for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. We've got a couple of interesting episodes coming your way next week. We're supposed to be joined by B.J. Armstrong, who's going to talk about the new documentary, Pooh, that was produced life of Derrick Rose.
Yeah,
it's going to be fascinating.
To
so we'll talk about that. And then, of course, after the final regular season game against the Philadelphia 76ers on April 10th, we will have an expanded edition talking about the season that has been and look ahead to what promises to be a very interesting offseason for the Chicago Bulls. So until next time, so long, everyone.